Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Geek Town Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host Dave Elliott, and on this episode I'm chatting with Fausto Tejeda from visual effects company Pixamondo Toronto, who are the people behind the VFX for Star Trek Discovery. Fausto specializes in sci-fi action genres in both traditional VFX and virtual production formats, most notably on the streaming series Star Trek Discovery, which is a hybrid of both. Throughout the show's four seasons, Fausto helped bring to the screen various creatures such as the Gormaganda / Space Whale and the Tardigrade, environments such as the rocky terrains of large asteroids, and ships. His spectacular work on the final battle sequence in Season 2 between Section 31, the Enterprise, and Discovery ships earned Fausto a very well-deserved Emmy nomination. Fausto worked in various supervisory capacities on Discovery, including CG supervisor, on-set supervisor, and VFX supervisor. In 2021, Fausto helped guide the show towards a new filmmaking era when Discovery transitioned to shooting on Pixamondo's LED volume stage in Season 4, where Fausto served as one of the on-set visual production supervisors. For those of you that don't know what a volume is, we do explain that in more detail in the interview. However, to give you a bit of background, it was the groundbreaking technology that was first developed by the team behind The Mandalorian to spectacular effect and has begun sweeping through the VFX industry as a brand new way of creating virtual environments and worlds, not only speeding up production, but also giving actors much more to work with than they would have on a normal green screen. If you'd like to hear more behind-the-scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geek Town Radio. This also gives you our weekly Geek Town Radio podcast, which brings you all the latest TV, filming, and gaming news. You can also go to the website at geektown.co.uk for daily news stories and all the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. Here's the interview with VFX supervisor Fausto Tejeda.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you for coming on and talking to me about stuff, because I really love the show. It's one of my favorite things on TV right now. So
happy to hear it and happy to be here. So
lovely to have you. I mean, obviously, you've done a whole bunch of different things, but the main thing you've been working on is Star Trek Discovery.
Yep, pretty much for the last 4 years.
You've been on from season one for that show. Before we get into talking about Discovery itself, just a little bit of background about you. How did you get into the industry in the first place?
So I studied, you know, visual effects in college for 3 years, and I graduated in 2008 in Miami, Florida. And since then, I've just kind of been traveling all over the U.S. Working. I lived in Louisiana, Los Angeles, and New York for a few years, working as a generalist. And then when I made the move to Toronto, I eventually ended up at Pixamondo. And the first show that I was on there was XXX. And then a few months shortly after, we started on Star Trek. And that's what I've been on ever since.
Awesome. Were you a fan of Star Trek beforehand, or was this of something that you were picking up as you went along?
I'm not gonna lie, I had never watched Star Trek beforehand. growing up, I'd never really had much interest in it. But as soon as I started working on the show, I kind of, you know, did a little bit of backtracking and I started watching TNG and I fell in love with the franchise.
Right.
I mean, such great characters in that show.
Yeah.
And then Discovery was just, you know, a fantastic new way of kind of seeing it from a modern point of view.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really interesting thing to kind of come in. And what were the discussions like? Were you involved right at the very start with the sort of discussions about how you were going to approach the effects for it?
More or less. I mean, the VFX supervisor on the client side, Jay-Z, he approached us kind of with the general scope of the show and what was needed. And we all did a lot of work early on with the production side, the director, editor, just kind of pre-vising a lot of things out, kind of getting a feel for the tone and what kind of action was expected and, you know, the ships and movements and things like that. And yeah, I mean, we discussed things pretty early on and we knew that we had to get it right from the get-go because it's a pretty big fan base. You can't screw that up. Well, so
that's one of the unique things, of course, with something like Star Trek, particularly with those first couple of seasons, because of the point in the timeline where it sits, because it's sort of post-Enterprise, pre the original series. And there are set designs for certain ships in there as well. There is a certain style to it. So you can't just kind of make it entirely up as you go along. So were there like piles of manuals of guidelines that you were having to go through or to sort of work that way? Or?
Oh, God. At least on our end, so much research went into making sure that things look as close as possible to the original. I mean, we had to stay true to a specific design language while still trying to kind of evolve it for, you know, the modern audience, because as much as people like to say that, oh, it's, we love the original, if we show something in, you know, 2020-21 that looks like it did in the 60s, it's not really gonna go over well.
Yeah,
so it was a fine juggling to try and get that balanced out.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you do a pretty good job. I mean, of course, the films came along in the intervening period, so there's kind of little hints of maybe stuff that came out of the movies in there, I think, as well as tying into the original series and all that good stuff. So I think it hits a balance really well across the whole series, because I think people do, like you say, people do understand that, you know, it's a new series. You can't make it look like it was in the 60s. That would be really weird. So in terms of the stuff that you've been doing on the show, I mean, there's a whole bunch of creatures and obviously the ships and environments. Do you want to just talk through some of the bits and pieces you were working on with the series?
Yeah, I mean, so since season one, we've kind of been in charge of fleshing out all the ships for the show. I mean, the Discovery, the Shenzhou, and I think season one, we had something like 30 different ships that we had to build, including shuttles and pods and all that kind of stuff. And then every season, we just try, you know, up the ante and improve on the look, improve on the assets, and just make it a little bit more user-friendly while still trying to update the look for the audience, because everybody expects to see something better and better every season. And then creatures, I mean, there's been a couple episodes where we had some creature work, which were super fun. I mean, we all love working on creatures, so that's been a real treat.
Yeah, I mean, two of the sort of standout creatures, maybe the tardigrade, obviously, you know, which was a huge part of the first season, which must have been quite an interesting one to do, because tardigrades are real creatures. They're just not normally quite the size that you see in Star Trek Discovery. So how did you approach that? Was it a case of just sort of taking a tardigrade and blowing it up so it was really big, or is it with a kind of other things that you added into it?
So we had some initial, you know, references from CBS as to more or less what direction they wanted to go in, and then we took it upon ourselves and created a few more concept art to, you know, kind of give them some variations. And then once something was approved, we moved on from there. But we definitely wanted to keep a real tardigrade in mind, but at the same time, like, this creature has evolved and turned into something completely different that's much more than just your little minuscule tardigrade. So we steered away from that very translucent, kind of transparent shell that a tardigrade normally has, that very micro scale, to give it a little bit more of a fleshy humanoid type skin, which worked out really well, especially for some of the things that I had to do. Like, you know, we had the one scene where it kind of shrunk down and lost all its water. It had to shrivel up into this little ball. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Is it kind of, I mean, watching some of that, it's quite emotional watching that scene, because, you know, this thing is dying. For you as somebody who basically created it, is that weird watching that sort of killing off a digital creature that you built?
It is, because at least for us, we kind of got to see the whole emotional roller coaster that we went through with this guy. I mean, they found him at first. He was a little little bit aggressive. And then you kind of got to know the reasoning behind why he was the way he was. And then at the end, you know, his ultimate demise. And then ultimately he comes back to life and leaves and kind of does his thing. But yeah, it was pretty emotional.
Yeah, it's interesting doing stuff like that. And then you got, I might pronounce this wrong, but it's the Gormaganda, I think is the name of it.
Yes. The space whale.
Yeah, the space whale.
That's what we referred to it.
Yes, the space whale, which was it was in the Harry Mudd episode, which is a great episode. How did you approach designing that? Because again, you know, as you say, it's described as a space whale. So were you using whale references for that? I mean, it doesn't look that whale-like when you actually see it necessarily. But...
the space whale. That was an interesting one. They had something practical on set when they were shooting all those all those shots, which ultimately ended up not getting used because design-wise, it was completely different than what we ended up with. Yeah, so they shot a few takes, and then, you know, once the studio side, they wanted to go in a different route, and then they left it up to us to design something new based on some concept work that they gave us. So we took that concept work, we took it a little bit further, expanded on it, gave it that very flesh translucent kind of feel to the skin, and then just, you know, went to town on animating and, you know, making it do all the fun things you see it do with the beaming in and out, going back in time, having it open up the mouth, having Harry Mudd come out from there. Those were some pretty cool scenes.
They were. And you've got that. Were there any other creatures that were in those episodes? Those are the two that particularly stood out, I think. But
yeah, I think the first two seasons, those were the main ones that we did. I mean, you know, Star Trek, there isn't as much creatures work as we would love, but
The other things, of course, are just straight up environments as well, which, I mean, there's a great thing about Star Trek because you go to different planets, you've got a whole range of environments to be able to do for that. Any particular favorites out of that?
Oh yes, my personal favorite was the intro to season 2 in episode 1 when they land on the asteroid.
Yes.
And they find the crash ship in there. We had a lot of fun making that environment. It was something completely different. So you had this very spiky, rocky environment, but that was still meant to be very moody while still trying to keep something very sci-fi. So we had all those kind of floating rocks on top. That was a fun environment for sure.
And then with the ships, obviously, when you first started, as I said, you are sort of pre the original series. So there is very definitive ship designs that were around, with the exception of Discovery. I mean, did you have much involvement in the design of Discovery itself, or was that sort of handed to you and then you worked out how you were going to make it work?
So not so much involvement in the actual design of the ships. Like, we were provided with some fantastic artwork from their, you know, art department.
Yeah.
And then we just fleshed that out. What we did do is, you know, we added a lot of extra details, things like paneling, the look of certain little phasers, things like cameras, where some of the doors were going to go, the hinges, just to make it more functional and to work for some of the shots that we needed. But yeah.
Okay. And the third season, you then have this quite dramatic shift because, you know, if anybody's seen the show, they jump majorly forward in time for in the third season. I mean, actually, before we get to that, I should say the end battle at the end of the second season, which actually won you an Emmy nomination, deservedly so, because it's a spectacular sequence that really is. Do you just want to talk a little bit about doing that? Because, I mean, there was a crazy amount of stuff going on in there.
Oh man. Yeah, a lot of sleepless nights for that.
I can imagine.
So that was actually a very interactive process. I mean, we would get a lot of storyboards from the producers, and then that would kind of guide us into a path of more or less what they wanted to see. It wasn't so much beat by beat, but just a general guideline. And so we do a few iterations on that. And then once we had a general kind of path of what the ships were meant to be doing, kind of the major ships, not so much the little ones, then we go out and flesh the scenes even more, especially all the little tiny ships that were, all the drone ships that were flying around in space. Like, it'd be impossible to hand animate those one by one. So we created a system where we had a different flocks of ships doing specific movements, and then we kind of moved those around and placed them where, you know, we felt needed to match the action that was happening and to drive the story forward. And then from there, it was just kind of making sure that the client was happy with it and that it was telling the story that they wanted to tell, and just take it from there.
That's interesting. So the sort of the background stuff, is that sort of automated in terms of the movements and stuff then?
Yeah, so we created, you know, a setup where we had both the good guys and the bad guys fighting, and then we kind of moved, especially in the backgrounds. We just kind of moved those where it was necessary for the story. And then everything that was closer to camera, we would hand animate that and make sure that it was following a specific movement to move things forward.
Oh, cool. That's interesting. As I say, the third season, you sort of jump forward quite majorly in time. Discovery gets quite a big refit as well in that. Was that sort of redesign handed to you, or did you have any input into that?
Third season was one of the most exciting ones for us, just because we finally get to move things to a much more modern era and kind of really update things. So again, we were provided with some fantastic concept work from the art department. And then it was up to us to really finesse and add in all the little details that you see on the ship. Episode 6 in particular was one of our favorite. I think, you know, client told us it was probably the best shot that they've ever seen of Discovery, that big reveal that we see.
The CG work is truly phenomenal on this series. I mean, it looks really wonderful. I mean, one of the other unique ships, of course, is Book's ship in this series, which is the sort of morphing shuttle thing that he has.
Yeah, that was a big challenge as well.
How did you approach dealing with that? Did they tell you that it needs to morph in some way and then you've had to figure it out? Or was it sort of more prescribed than that?
CBS is pretty particular with what they want to see and, you know, the executive producers and all that. So once again, they provided us with some great concept work, just showing us what the final forms would look like.
Right.
So we had the base look of the ship and then the 4 or 5 different kind of transformed versions of it. And then it was up to us to kind of handle how that was going to happen.
Mm.
So we had a few, you know, ways of doing it. We either had something that was automated for, you know, shots where you just would see it happen really fast. And then we also had, you know, total control of how all the panels could move. So we could either make it a little bit more complex as needed or just kind of, you know, do something quick based on the shot.
Yeah. So the transformation stuff with you guys, I mean, it's really interesting how that ship sort of is put together and stuff. I wondered, one of the other animals, of course, is the cat. Did you end up having to CG the cat anywhere? I mean, I know they had one on set. Oh, was that?
Unfortunately, no. We didn't end up doing the cat. But I heard it was well-behaved, so that was good.
If you can't CG it, at least have a well-behaved one. That's what you want. So are there any other particular sequences you'd like to talk about on the show, that stuff that you'd like to point out?
I mean, the chase sequence at the start of season 3 was also you know, pretty fun for us. I mean, we got to introduce one of the new main characters, Book, as well as Cosmo. And then we see Burnham coming out through the wormhole, coming into the new timeline, which was pretty cool. So that whole intro sequence was really fun to do. Again, a lot of work trying to get the choreography right, matching things to sound, and just making sure it holds up to our standards.
Like
everything always presents a new challenge. Also, when they get to the planet where Burnham and Book kind of see this massive floating market, and we do that big reveal, that was also pretty wild for us. It was a brand new environment, you know, again, very different from anything that we'd done in the past in terms of Star Trek. So it was fun to bring that to life.
Yeah, no, I bet. I mean, it's an incredible world to be able to sort of get your hands on and play around with, particularly in the context of the third and fourth seasons, where you are in a situation where it's outside of anything that's already established. So you have a little bit more freedom, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, Star Trek, at least to me, it's one of those shows where it's almost a dream to work on, because you get to do a little bit of everything. You get sci-fi, you get, you know, drama, you get romance, such a plethora of characters and worlds to draw from, that it's a treat to work on the show, for sure.
Yeah. What I like about something like this, because you get sort of various types of VFX, you get the sort of hidden stuff, which I'm sure there is hidden VFX in this, but I mean, there is obviously a lot of fairly obvious VFX because it's a space show, so there's ships and all that sort of stuff. What are the sort of more interesting, maybe hidden stuff that you had to do in the show?
Oh, wow. On season 1, that whole sarcophagus ship, the roof, every time we'd see the roof on that, it was all a VFX extension. Just because obviously on set, you know, we had to take out the lights and the scaffolding and things like that. So all that was always a set extension. Every time we're in the shuttle bay, 90% of it is a set extension.
Yeah.
And then we're really excited for this new season and for everybody to see all the work that's been done with the volume.
Yeah. I was going to come on to that, because taking a note out of the Mandalorian's book, because the Mandalorian came up with this volume workspace. They were really probably the first show to use that type of thing. And am I right in thinking it's actually Pixamondo's volume?
You know, this is Pixamondo's volume. We built the stage ourselves, put a lot of hard work into making sure that it meets the needs of our clients.
For people that don't know what the volume is, we've talked about it in a couple of different interviews before, but for people that haven't heard those, do you just want to explain what the volume is?
So the volume is a set of LED panels built into a giant wall. Depends on the size, different stages. We're allowed to have bigger or smaller sizes. And then on that volume, we project images that come out of a Unreal, which is a game engine,
yeah,
in which we bring all our assets to. And then we track that to the actual production camera so that we get correct perspective and parallax as the camera moves. So it makes you feel like the character is actually there. And the great thing about the volume is that it gives you proper lighting.
Mm.
So you no longer have to rely strictly on set lighting and having practical lights there. Now a lot of this information can come directly from the wall so that you get proper reflections, proper lighting, highlights, and the characters look much more integrated.
Yeah, as I say, as an example of this, I mean, The Mandalorian was a show that used a volume to great extent. Just to give you an idea of it, if people have seen The Mandalorian, 90% of that was shot on a volume indoors, even the outdoor shots. I mean, and you just wouldn't know. So I was really excited when they announced that Discovery was going to get one, because, I mean, this must be game-changing for you in terms of the work that you can do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big learning curve for everyone, especially on the production side as well, just because it's a completely new workflow, you know? So it was a small little learning curve at the beginning, but everybody's loving it so far. I mean, the things that we're pushing out on the volume is quite incredible. We're definitely pushing the limits to what can be done. I don't want to spoil anything.
Well, of course, but yeah.
Just be on the lookout.
Yeah, so I'm guessing you were mentioning there about, you know, the things like the shuttle bay being a set extension. Presumably, you could now project that directly onto the volume and use that as a way of building that environment instead.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, a lot of environments that we're used to seeing, you know, on the regular are not going to be going to treat it as a volume set extension. So it's made things a lot easier for everyone. I mean, and the turnaround time on, you know, switching things like lights, time of day, rotating the set, all that kind of stuff is just, it's mind-blowing how much faster it's getting done right now.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing, of course, is when you're trying to shoot this in the middle of a pandemic, if you're not having to take actors out of a bubble to go to some particular quarry somewhere to go and shoot a particular scene, you can do it in a volume instead. That's got to be a lot easier and a lot safer, I would have thought, right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the COVID guidelines on set have been, you know, incredible. We all get tested regularly, at least once, twice, sometimes three times a week, depending on where we're shooting. So it's been great. Everybody loves being on there. The actors think it's a huge, huge leap from just being in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
Because now they actually have something to interact with. Now they can actually look out in a space as opposed to just staring blankly into, you know, a giant green wall. Mm. So it's been really fun.
Yeah. For the actors, there've been interviews with the guys that have used this technology on The Mandalorian, saying it makes a huge difference for them because of the fact that you're not sitting in a green room trying to imagine everything looking at tennis balls, you know. So
exactly.
I'm really excited to see where they land with season 4 on this. And I'm glad to see that the volumes are being used, because I think it's a phenomenal piece of technology that is just going to be game changing for the industry.
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, there's some pretty big things coming, so it's exciting times ahead.
Yeah, yeah. You're working on season 4 of that now. Good luck with it. I look forward to seeing that when it comes out. It's, I think they've said later this year, I think it's, or next year. I can't remember. It's the end of this year.
Yeah, end of the year.
End of the year. This is due out. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that coming out. A couple of last questions for you. First question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, putting me on the spot like this. it's hard to find time to watch TV with everything that's going on.
Sure.
For sure, Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yes.
I mean, everything that Marvel's doing is just, man, it's outstanding. Just finished up WandaVision.
That was phenomenal.
Those are, you know, kind of the shows that I'm watching right now.
Both great shows. The WandaVision I thought was great, and I'm really enjoying Falcon Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, it can be something from the past, something present, or some sort of future genre, what show would it be?
Oof, that's another big one. Honestly, anything Marvel.
Anything Marvel, yeah.
Marvel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a fair chance that at some point, given that you're at Pixamondo, I'm sure something will come across at some point.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not out of the question.
Yeah. So hopefully that comes up. And it's not like they're going to stop making Marvel TV shows anytime soon, is it really?
No,
so?
I mean, honestly, anything Marvel or Star Wars, because, you know, I just like Star Trek, I'm a huge fan of Star Wars. So
yeah.
Are kind of the things that get you into the industry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The amount of people that those sort of things, particularly Star Wars, I think particularly people in your industry that influenced is phenomenal. So I shall let you get back to your day. Thank you for spending a little bit of time to chat through your stuff. It's been lovely to catch up. I love the series. Good luck with the TV show. I'm so looking forward to the full season, and hopefully we'll talk again in the future when that's all come out.
Sounds good. Thank you, David. It was my pleasure to be here. Really right. Appreciate it.
Lovely
Happy
talking to you.
You're enjoying the show.
Lovely talking to you. Speak again soon. Cheers.
All right. Cheers.
Take Bye. Care.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.